Hier is ingeskakel op Sonopontbyt en hierdie is Sonopgaan Bos en dit word met trots moontlik gemaak en geborg deur Wild Manel Spruit.
Daar is niks so lekker as ons eie bosveld maan in die laafveld nie. En dit is nog lekkerder as jy dit kan deel saam vriende soos Wild Manel. Dit is die manne se stories en hulp oor hulle dag se jag wat jou avontuur nog verbeter. Manne, dis 'n voorreg om die stories te gaan luister en ons spesiale aanbiedinge te gaan uitloer. Wild Manel Spruit, wat 'n voorreg.
Baie welkom en saam met ons in die ateljee vanoggend sê ons môre en welkom aan Roland Masnak en hy is van die Ereveldwagters, die ander Rangers.
Ja, ons gaan bos vanoggend weer, lekker elke woensdagoggend hierdie tyd. Dankie vir Wildman vir dit. Vandag gesels ons oor 'n baie interessante ding. En ek dink almal van ons was iewers al skuldig geweest aan dit. Roland, there's a big issue within the Kruger Park.
Morning, Roland.
Morning. Sorry. Welcome. Sorry, I'm so focused on what we talked. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, welcome. And you have something which is heavily on your shoulders that we will discuss today. And that is something I think the majority of us sometime were guilty of doing. If you work in the park, it's one thing, but if you visit it, it's another.
Yeah. Yeah. Roland, start by if you don't mind, explaining to us Break for Wildlife. Where did it originate? Where did this initiative start?
Okay, I need to go to a little bit of a background there because the concept goes back a while. We as HR's only got involved pretty recently. So firstly, EWT, Endangered Wildlife Trust, are involved internationally in a number of conservation projects. Now, they have found that millions of animals are killed on our roads every year. And they then started collecting data to see what the impact was on our road infrastructure on wildlife. And in this process, and it's a long process, because these are researchers you're talking about. These are guys who don't do things chop-chop. They do things properly. They research. They get data. And then they make the decisions. But they found or highlighted that there were certain gaps. They were maybe looking at national roads or certain specific areas where there were specific problems, but they weren't looking at our protected areas. And the protected areas, the parks, the national parks, are the places where all our animals are. And we the custodians, we need to make sure that we try and look after all those animals for as long as possible so our kids and our kids' kids can see and enjoy what we are doing. So what EWT did then, they partnered with Sandparks, and then Sandparks on Erie Rangers, and I think I need to throw in Ford here as well because Ford sponsored the vehicle for EWT to do their study. So in between 2014 and 2020, they conducted all these surveys. This is this research thing all over South Africa, gathering all the data. And that was to try and collect baseline figures because nobody had a handle on how many animals are dying every day. And, you know, you can only manage what you can measure. So they had to get the researchers to find out what that baseline number was. And then they moved on to the next phase, which was observing driver behavior. Now, we're not doing that where we are, but you need to understand this as a background. So in Pilansburg, for example, in Northwest Parks, they would put a green plastic snake in the middle of the road. Okay, and they would observe. They would just see that, hide in the bush, and they would just observe and see what people do. Now, some people were looking for the leopard in the tree, and they drove straight over the snake. Other people saw the snake and then dodged it. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you got other people who actually saw the snake and almost intentionally sort of thought, hey, that's a bad thing. I'm going to drive over this thing. Yeah. So, and that's the sort of things that were happening. What the next step then of the program was, so that happened over 2014 to 2000. The next step then was to try and see what mitigating factors we could introduce to try and reduce roadkill in the parks. And it's not complicated, this. So what they've basically done is they've designed signboards. So we've got 4 signboards up in the park, and I'll explain how we do that measuring just now. But they're pleading with the visitor to please slow down. So there's a picture there, maybe something like this. You see a tortoise or a mongoose or whatever it is crossing the road, and they're pleading because legally, we're monitoring on tar roads, legally the visitor's allowed to do 50 kilometers an hour. Yes. Mm. He's not breaking a law if he does more. So we're pleading him, just in this 2-kilometer area, we've got a signboard at the start and a signboard at the end, please slow down. And then the idea is that after a whole year of research, and we base our research into 6-week programs, so we do a 6-week on, 1 week off, 6-week on, they will then analyze all this data because we collect it. Every bit of roadkill that we get in that 10-kilometer zone, we record exactly where it happened, get the coordinates, et cetera, et cetera, and then we give it back to EWT, and they will then decide on what the next steps are. EWT themselves don't have the resources or the funds. They're involved in, like I said in the beginning, many, many projects, conservation projects, and all of this costs money. And us as HRs, it's our home. We want to do whatever we can, and we do it for free. So you don't get cheaper than free. And they're obviously using our facilities, the resources that we have to do the programming. So, or the monitoring, I should say, not the programming. Mm. So the HRs, just like myself, will come in, and they'll come in onto a 6-week program, and they might only be able to afford a day, or 2 days, or whatever it is. Some of them do it for 7 days. So they will then go out and monitor these 2 sections of road and record all the roadkill that they find.
Mm.
So how it works is we've got these 2-kilometer what we call hotspot roads, and the hotspot roads are normally between an entrance park and a main camp. So you can just imagine in your mind, Paul Kruger Gate and Skukuza is a hotspot. Mm. It's actually like a Kailami racetrack. Mm. Pabeni Gate to Skukuza is another hotspot. So we've chosen, with the help of EWT on their previous research, in the earlier days when they did all the research, 2 specific sections, 10-kilometer sections. So because we're not expert researchers, we need to know exactly where we are. So when we find roadkill, we can record it because we break the 10 kilometers up into zones. Mm. So we put down what we call a dropper post. It's just a little metal post with a flag on top, and that will be the start of what we call a control zone. So we have a 2-kilometer control zone. Mm. After the 2-kilometer control zone, we have another peg, another dropper post for another 2 kilometers, and we call that a buffer zone. And then after that 2 kilometers is the first signboard, saying, please, we're pleading with you, slow down. This is a hotspot for roadkill. Further down is another 2 kilometers, and then you'll see a sign on the other side of the road. And then the next 2 kilometers and the next 2 kilometers are the buffer and control again. Mm. So you've got control, buffer, treatment, as we call it, the hotspot, and then again a buffer and a control. So what they're trying to do is to say, by putting up these signboards, we have appealed, and we're reaching or getting through to certain visitors to the park to say, hey, it's my duty. It's not by law, but I feel obliged to slow down now for the next 2 kilometers, and then I'll carry on. So all we do is we do 2 patrols per day. We do one as early in the morning as possible, so we can pick up what happened overnight. We can also pick up the early people coming into the park, because they normally, and it's the workers, unfortunately, you know, they're coming in, it's their job. They don't view it as a park, it's their job, it's their highway.
Yeah, that was a question. Who's the main culprit? And personal experience is, I've seen guys drive really high speeds who work within the park. So, and it's difficult because the vast area that needs to cover and the remoteness of it. I mean, are there still traffic officers operating in the park?
There are still, and they're actually more than I thought, because I always thought that there were as low as 3 traffic officers reporting into protection services covering the whole park. I had actually had a meeting last week with Bindele from Protection Services, and she told me there's, I think the number was nine or ten. No. So it's better than three, but if you think about the size of the park, it's probably still enough. But what I did find comforting and gave me a warm feeling is I was having a meeting with one of the Sandpark staff, and one of the traffic officers happened to come in to my private meeting to do her business. And I got chatting to her, and she was explaining to me the things that they battle with, you know, because we think it's easy. I'm a simple person. I say, if you're speeding, stop the person, issue them with a spot fine, and if they pay R1,000 out of their pocket, they're going to learn a lesson. It's not always so easy to do these things. There's certain laws that they need to comply with, and if somebody's doing 50, for example, in this zone where we've asked them to do 40, they haven't broken the law. So they, technically, they can't issue a speeding fine. But to answer your question, even though previous surveys prove the opposite, I believe that it can't be true, the biggest culprits are the workers, because you see them. You see the buses coming in with workers. You see the people coming in with uniform, with three people, four people in the car. They're obviously got a lift club, and they're going from their home outside the gate into the park. And for them, they've got to get to their job by whatever it is. And if they're late, they're in trouble. So, and they don't care. And I suppose you can almost understand it. You know, if it becomes a routine. You know, I do this every day of my life.
Yes.
So why must I do 50?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, if I'm a couple of minutes late coming to work, then I speed up on the road, yeah. Because I don't want to be late for work.
Exactly.
You know, so there's a certain amount of you can understand. To them, it's not the Kruger Park that we go visit. To them, it's where they have to do their job.
It's their place
they
of
become
work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you something interesting. Our time's running out, unfortunately. But there's a QR code on one of these signs. Is that QR code just more information linked to the whole project?
Yes, it's a very good question, because I was misled by that QR code as well. The QR code is really just to give you more information about EWT and what they're trying to do. The more important thing is, and that's the thing that we need to try and get more people involved in, EWT have an app. So you can load that app on your phone. It's called EWT Roadwatch. And what we're trying to do is get as many people as possible to load that app and use it, because we've got, I don't know, 2,500 HRs in the country. That's even if all of them had the app on their phone, it's not giving us a heap
not
of data.
Enough.
You've got a million visitors coming into the park every year. Even if 1% of those visitors could load that app on their phone and record the roadkill, that will help us, because helps us quantify the problem. It also helps us identify where new hotspots are, because if there's a lot of roadkill happening here or a lot of roadkill happening there that we're not aware of, yeah, exactly that. So you load that on your phone, and it loads on any phone. I must warn, there are a little bit of problems we're having with the app, but we're trying to work through them. You only have to load it on your phone once. Then it's on your phone. You'll put in your details, either your cell phone number or your email address, just in case EWT need to come back and ask you a question about the roadkill that you picked up. But can you just imagine if more people are using that app, how much it would help us to gather data? And that's really where I think all the people listening today and all the people that we deal with can help us.
And it's a free application.
Totally free.
Really. I opened it, there's like, I've installed it quickly, and there's like a chameleon in front of a vehicle's car. Then a reporter, it gives you the GPS location, so if you want to report a roadkill, that's where you do. Well, if you have reception in the Kruger Park, I think that's one of the other challenges maybe. And submit. You can also submit without a picture and with a picture.
We prefer if you submit with a picture, because none of us are experts on roadkill. Sometimes it's just a splat, and you need to see what the splat is. But you only have to do that once. It's better to put a picture in, and it's that dead easy. You don't even have to put the coordinates in because the system, the app, picks up the coordinates.
Okay.
So even if you're not in a Wi-Fi area, it'll hold it all. And when you get back to a Wi-Fi area, it'll push through all the information and the data.
Yeah, and the small detail that you need to enter, when the animal details.
You really just put in, it's a squirrel or a snake or whatever it is, put your photo in, and that's basically all you do. You press submit, and it's as simple as that.
It makes absolute sense if it takes every person to do their little bit to make it work.
A tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah,
that's all
absolutely.
We have to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Roland, thank you so much. It was great having you in studio and with this valuable information. And hopefully all our listeners will download the app and get going on this initiative.
That'll be great. Thank you for the
opportunity. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Roland.
En dit was Sonopgaan Bos hier op 100.5. Baie dankie vir jou saamluister.